everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us tonight on this broadcast that's put on by our nonprofit, Sped Homeschool. If you don't know about us, you can visit us at spedhomeschool.com. That's spedhomeschool.com. You can find a variety of resources to help you in homeschooling your struggling learner. And we are here to just empower you and equip you so that you can do it confidently. And so we do this broadcast because we know that there's a variety of different things that parents often ask questions about when homeschooling students with different learning struggles. And this month specifically, we're focusing on those dyses, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and dyslexia. And so tonight, specifically, we're going to be talking about dysgraphia. And I'm excited to introduce you to my guest, Sherry Dotterer. Is that how you say your last name? I guess
that
I didn't
is correct.
Even ask. Okay. Well, that's great. Sherry and I met in June at a conference, and I'm so excited to finally have her on the show because she has a wealth of information on dysgraphia. And so so I'm glad that she's with us. I'm also glad to see that we're already seeing viewers pop on. I know a lot of you put in to reserve your spot for this broadcast. So you're probably watching on YouTube. You could be watching on Facebook, or you may be even watching on Periscope. Not many viewers there, but I know there are some. But we just want to thank you for joining us and just know that you can be part of our conversation. Actually, we'll see your comments and your questions that you put in the feed wherever you're watching from live, and we'll be able to include those in our conversation. And we want to make sure that that we do that because you have taken the time to watch this broadcast while it's being produced, which is exciting. So Creative Minds Homeschooling has already joined us, and she's done a little wave. So we're going to wave back at you. So Sherry, the topic tonight that you said that you wanted to kind of cover is dysgraphia. What is it anyways? And I love that because a lot of us do wonder that. And I'm excited to hear all that you have to share. And I've already read through Sherry's book, by the way, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, Handwriting, the Body-Brain Disconnect. There is just so much good information in here.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I'd like to say Happy Learning Disabilities Month. It is Invisible Learning Disabilities Month. So any of those invisible disabilities that somebody has, that dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and a lot of mental health issues as well go into that invisible disability category. Yep. So happy Learning Disabilities Month. So... I just needed to get that out of the way before we even explain a lot of these disabilities. And it is a different sort of ability than what the typical population is. Is that the best way to say that?
I don't know if there's a best way to say anything in these days. Somebody takes offense or is happy with it all at the same time.
What we said today might not work tomorrow, but so there's the three main invisible disabilities or specific learning disabilities are the dyslexia, the dysgraphia, and the dyscalculia. And when you look at the DSM-5, the first two descriptions really reflect effort in reading and really difficulty with sounding out words and recognizing the letters. Mm-hmm. The second two relate to spelling and grammar and punctuation and sentence structure and paragraph structure. The last two, so there's a total of six, the last two really have to do with computations, number sense, mathematical reasoning. So when the DSM-5 was put together, they really separated, and there's just two areas for each one of those disabilities that they specifically talk about what are the disabilities. Now, they also go on to just say that it is also when a child reaches their capacity to be able to do that activity. I keep bumping my microphone. Sorry about that, audience. Forgive me. So I just wanted to say that there is those specific pieces, but we're also talking about activity demand. And when that reaches that disability and that frustration level, and I think that is the thing that our young readers see first is like, how do I hold a pencil? I don't know what this thing is. I'm not quite sure what to do with it. And of course, we are not explicitly teaching how to use the tools that they need to be able to write in the classroom. When I say that, I'm talking like the public school classroom, which is not where your tribe lives. But when we're looking at that public area, they're not explicitly teaching that. So for your homeschool moms and dads, when you're thinking about handwriting, it really needs to be explicitly taught. And then this part is when they're really struggling to get the material down on paper. So there, it's multifaceted. It has to do with understanding where to put a letter on the piece of paper, what tool you're using to write it with and how to hold it, what to do with lines or no lines on the paper, what to do with putting a couple letters side by side to make a word. How do you put a space in there? Like all those things have to go through a child's mind just to be able to put a piece of a letter on or a word or a sentence on paper. So it has to do with all of those aspects.
Those are good points that you have, because as parents, we don't process that is all involved in that, what we consider a simple process. And all those things that kids have to have mastered or combined in order to make that work.
Correct.
So thank you for, elaborating on that at the very beginning, because I think that wakes us up that this is a conversation we all need to listen to, because there's a lot of moving parts involved in here. I also want to thank WriteShop for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. I forgot to mention that at the beginning. And one question I have for you, Sherry, you mentioned the DSM. I know some parents don't know what that is. Can you give a quick explanation of that?
Sure. The DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders. It's kind of like the Bible of the psychology profession. And when what they've done is they've taken all of those little innuendos and the all those little pieces, and they've coded them and so like when you go to get a prescription from the doctor, just happen to have one right here, they have that little code down at the bottom. The mental health has their own set of codes. The orthopedic doctors have their own set of codes. The neurology doctors have their own set of codes. And the DSM-5 is kind of like the digital layout of what those codes mean. So it's a very expansive book, and it goes into everything. But the section that I'm referring to is in the very, kind of in the front of the book. It's under the developmental disabilities section. So this that I'm talking about is a developmental disability. It is not quite at the same location as somebody like that would have a attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's in a section near it, but it's not in the same section as dysgraphia, which really was one of the things that I was trying to delineate when I got started working in this. Is, wait a minute, what is, like the chicken and egg thing, which is coming first? Is it this or is it that? And do does everybody that have this have that? And I'm like, I don't understand. So part of the reason I got into this in the first place is I was trying to figure out how to explain this to others. And what was it? And and I wasn't getting the material from any of the other therapists that I was working with. Like, they didn't really have a good, clear answer. So I was looking for clarity for myself so I could share it with others. And next thing I knew, I had enough material to put it down in a book. And here I am a few years later talking with you. And
right.
Who'd have thought that we'd be talking across state lines? and goodness, I've spoken in Turkey from this seat right here.
Wow.
I've spoken in Greece. I've spoken in Australia. It just blows my mind how the world of the internet has just brought us
connected
together.
Us.
And,
yeah.
And all those, everybody's trying to learn from one another and really trying to help each other out. And it's just an amazing collaboration that, yeah. that the internet has provided us.
Exactly. So I know you're very passionate about this topic. And I also know that this passion kind of comes from a backstory. Can you share a little bit about that with us? Because that just lets our audience get to know you a little better and understand who you are.
Sure. So when I first became an occupational therapist, I managed to get through my undergrad. I got through grad school and I was out in the workforce and I kept getting fired. And I'm like, what is going on here? Why? How can I have gotten this far in my life? And then when I get out in the workforce, I get fired because of communication. Or the lack of communication is more to the point.
Okay.
And that was kind of one of those stepping stones as to what is causing the chicken and the egg here. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I was looking at was I had this mom that kept saying, my child can read above grade level. Why can't he write? Mm-hmm. And I went, I don't know. I am not quite sure I get that part, because everything that I had heard about before was you can't read, you can't write.
Right.
There was no, you can do one and not the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have any inkling at that time how math was part of the process as well. So what I have learned since then is we have reading issues, we have writing issues, and we have math issues. And when from a neurological process, we have this neural pathway going here. We have this neural pathway going here. I don't have enough hands. We have this one going over here. Okay.
Right.
And at some point, they all have to go together and become one.
And it takes
a delay. There is a delay in that connecting of the the different pathways. So even though I had a child who was reading up here,
right.
His writing was still down here because of other reasons. And it took me really studying it over a couple years and studying him as well. Today, he is a senior in high school with a very minimal IEP. I am not positive, but I know mom was talking about the fact that they were converting it over into a 504 so that by the time he graduates, that he will be able to enter college with a 504. And what he is needing the 504 for isn't what we were working on in those early days. Mm-hmm. It is more just, I need a little extra time to complete things. I need a certain pen or pencil to be able to take my notes properly. Early on, it was literally having him under a blanket.
Wow.
With the paper in front of him, he would write in this enclosed environment that you could barely see him. And we had days when I would come to the house and he was inappropriately dressed. And I'm like, you need to go to your room and get something different on because I can't be here. And he thought that meant I was going to leave. No, I sat there until so that he would get used to the fact that I was not going to to be triggered by his inappropriate dress. Mm. And it took us a long time to get over that. He was my first kid when I started working in this field. And I would say he and his mom were the facilitators of why I am where I am today. And mom is now has her master's degree in special education. He is going to be going into the military when he graduates from high school, and his brother and his sister also have disabilities and they are off doing amazing things in college. So that's just to say, parents, even if it starts out with a struggle, they can progress to a point. It's just a little bit slower than their other students.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think we feel like we're going to get stuck in that space.
Now, if there is a neurological condition that's coinciding with it, comorbid, there you're going to have that problem as well going on. But the dysgraphia piece really is one category of the disability. It's not all of it. So a lot of ADHD, executive function issues coincide.
Right.
They are not the dysgraphia. They are the executive function from the ADHD. So I know one of the things that you were wanted to ask me about was the comorbidities and things like that. And that would be the way I would summarize it to the simplest form is the dysgraphia is the writing and the understanding of the writing piece. The executive functions are a totally different ballgame.
Okay.
And they are the ones that are driving the lack of writing.
Okay. Yeah. So as far as symptoms, I mean, parents, you know, they're like, my child has trouble writing. Is that the only symptom I'm having? I guess that there's not.
No.
There are
several. So if to make it simple for you so that you have a visual, if you go to my website at sherrydotter.com and go to the parent page, I have them listed there. But in general, it is an inability to recognize letters and numbers. It is a difficulty with some kind of motor function. There might be an issue with memory. So I cannot remember that. Is that B going this way or is that B going that way? It could also be really an inability to recognize the spelling rules to create words. So I have a lot of kids who want to spell the word enough, E-N-U-F.
Oh, yeah.
Because phonetically, that's how you spell it, right?
Right.
So we have to work through that so we can educate them on the spelling rules. Then we get to sentence structure and paragraph formation. And we have all these little nuances, pieces that go along with it. And one of the things that was really driving me with my student that I talked about was that he was having such trouble converting the phonetic spelling to the actual spelling. And I kept going, okay, what can we do with spelling? And I was drilling teachers and dyslexia tutors and all kinds of people along the way. And nobody was giving me this a really good answer. And then the light bulb hit me. The light bulb was we have visual learning, we have auditory learning, but there's one other kind of learning. And that is the movement. And everything that I was coming up with when I was looking at remediation for spelling did not include number three. And I was like, okay, so how are we going to include movement? So I'm sitting here working on my book and I'm going, I need some kind of kinesthetic piece. How do I do a kinesthetic piece? And I began listening to Jim Quick. Do you know who I mean by Jim Quick?
I don't.
It's K-W-I-K. He is a gentleman who is dyslexic, dysgraphic, and dyscalculic, has all three of them. Oh. And he was determined to learn how to read and to speed read to boot. So he has a program and he has taught many an actor how to get through the script in a short amount of time and memorize it.
Wow.
And he now gets in front of audiences and he will go around the room randomly to 100 people and then verbatim in order and not get them wrong, tell you everybody's name, those 100 people. And you're going,
wow.
And he was he teaches you how to do these memorization methods. And I had another student, not the one I was talking to you about, but another student, and he was having trouble with the phonetic spelling as well. And I said, look, I was listening to this gentleman. He gave me two ways to do this. Let's try one and see if it works. And if that one doesn't work, we'll try the other kind. See if that one works. And if it doesn't, okay. But if it does, I want to explore this a little bit further. So method number one was a disaster. Oh. Method number two was like, why didn't you teach me that before, Miss Sherry? And I'm like, because I didn't think about it before. And basically what I did was I created an alphabet. I call it the body sentence alphabet. And you hold the book up again. It's on page 156 of that book.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, basically I have a letter A with a movement that begins with the letter A.
I remember that page.
Okay. You remember that now?
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I use a lot, utilize the word enough because that was the first one we started with. So, and I do it bilaterally. So one of the things when we're doing the education, I include both sides of the brain. So I am doing bilateral movement. In this particular instance, I am doing that parallel on the sides of the body. Some things I will do where I'm interlacing my hands. This particular one, I am just doing it. So temporarily, I'm going to remove because I don't want to hit my mic. So it's eyes, E, N, nose, O, open, under, and I go back and forth just to do that. And G, forgive, and then H is high fives. So I have the kids do that big movements. The idea then is by on Monday, it's big. By Friday, it's all in their mind. So that they can take the spelling test. And then we don't do all of the spelling words because that is just too much for them to handle at one time.
Right.
We will take one or two and get them to really understand those. Then we get to add to it. Then we add to it. Another thing that we do is we have the spelling words from, say, the beginning of September. And we don't see them again, right? Well, I am constantly recycling back. So I am constantly going back so that I am building on them and they are continually going through the ones that they have learned in the past.
Right.
And if they don't remember them, they get them more often. So if they're remembering them, they may not see it for a week or so and then it'll come back. So it's called retrieval practice where you're increasing the length of time. You also have interleaving, which is that interlacing the old and the new together.
Yes.
So make it stick. If you wanted to type that in, Make It Stick by Peter Brown is a great book that teaches a lot of those cognitive strategies for the students.
Okay. Yeah. That's some really good
It's Peter Brown and somebody else, but that's the only guy I remember at the moment. It's a blue book, I believe.
Okay. And then
we have it digitally, so I can't just pull it out for you.
Okay. And the other one you said was Jim Quick.
And the other gentleman is Jim Quick, K-W-I-K. Yeah. So that's how I learned some of the techniques that I was trying to help with these students accomplish that. And then my next thing was, well, okay, I'm an occupational therapist, so I'm helping with letter formation. How do I help a kid with sentence structure and paragraph structure? And where do I draw the line as a therapist?
Right. Yeah. Because oftentimes we just think handwriting. We don't often go into that next phase of that dysgraphia can affect that as well.
Exactly. And one of the things that I have found is kids that have a dysgraphia, including myself, I can't tell you what they are. I have to really think. I don't know what part of speech it is. I need to really think about it. And I have utilized that website, theverbs1.com, a lot, because I can't tell you whether it's a noun or a verb, an adverb, an adjective. I understand the principles.
Okay.
But if I'm looking at a sentence, I can't tell you. And I realized that the hard way when I was trying to help a kid.
Oh.
I was like, this isn't working because I don't understand myself. So, so color coding is the way I got around it. It's teaching, helping kids, and always using the same color to go with nouns, always using the same color to go with verbs, always using the same color to highlight that. Now, then we get into those things like participles and clauses and things like that. And then it goes totally a new plane of confusion. So, so I understand the material that's out there, but don't ask me what it, you know, if, and people say that my writing is not flowing sometimes. Well, I've got dysgraphia. I admit it. And I am doing the best, but I'm getting the point across and people are understanding. So have you had any questions come in? I haven't yet,
but we're about at halftime. And since we're kind of at a break, I think we'll take our break right now to hear from our sponsor. And then we're going to dive into some of the questions, unless those of you that are watching have some questions for us. We have Kara Sue the Dreamer says, I have dysgraphia myself.
And I'm curious, Kara Sue the Dreamer, how old are you? Are you an adult or are you still in school?
We'll have to wait to hear.
What was that resource for nouns and pronouns? I didn't really give a resource for nouns and pronouns. What I did was I looked on the internet and found a graphic. An infographic that had parts of speech, and I just utilized the infographic color that is there. Like there was one that was 8 parts, 24. So are you in school or are you out of college? I don't know if she is. So hopefully, Paulina, I was able to help you with that question that you had there.
Yeah, those infographics are great for kids. You know, I find that any visual I can put up in my house when I was teaching my kids and homeschooling, those things, they looked at them all the time, and it was extremely helpful.
Yeah, there was one that really goes into it in detail, and I'd have to go into the world of infographics to see if I can find it again. But the website maybe for the verbs that she might be asking for was verbs1.com.
Oh yeah. That's the one you mentioned.
Yeah. Maybe that was the resource that Paulina is referring to.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm currently looking at college, by the way. My pronouns are they, them. Wonderful. I'm glad that things are working for you.
Yes, she said that will be helpful. This is also help my son. He has dysgraphia.
Wonderful.
From Paulina.
So, Paulina, I'd also like, is your book on over? You had to ask that question about Audible.
Oh, no.
No. And a part of it is my...
There's a lot of pictures in this book. And so I would recommend actually getting the book. I have to see if I can find
Yeah, there are a lot of pictures in the book. That was one reason.
Different things.
Yeah, that was one reason of not putting it on Audible. The second reason is that I have a little bit of dyspraxia with my oral speech, and I was afraid I'd be stuttering too much to get through it, especially when I'm reading. When I'm talking with you, it gets much better. But if I'm sitting there reading, it doesn't work so well. Mm. So, and I wanted to be able to read my own book. Yeah. So that is why it's not on Audible at this time. There's pictures, and I didn't feel like I could do it justice. So my publisher keeps telling me I need to change that too. So Creative Minds Homeschooling, that's why.
Very cool. All right. Well, I'm going to give Sherry a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to do some more questions. But if you have questions in the meantime, while I'm doing our sponsor spot, put them in and we'll come back and start with those. Otherwise, we'll start with some other questions that we've thought of before the show. And so I'll see you in just a minute, Sherry. And I'm going to pull up, let's see, the information for Write Shop. And I just want to thank Write Shop for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. So Write Shop asks, how are your homeschooling lessons going for you? Are there tiered frustrations or long minutes staring at a blank piece of paper because I don't know what to write? Well, here's the solution, Write Shop curriculum. Finally, a writing program that understands the challenges of teaching writing. Write Shop has options for kindergarten all the way through high school with engaging step-by-step lessons. Write Shop gives students the necessary building blocks of the writing process, so there's zero frustration. And Write Shop not only teaches kids how to write, it shows you how to teach. You'll learn to guide them through the writing process and inspire even the most reluctant writers. Parents rave about the results. Sherry in Florida says, I'm so pleased with Write Shop. My eighth grader, who was lukewarm about writing and really didn't write too well, is blossoming. Haley in California says, thank you very much for creating Write Shop. It's been a pleasure to teach this curriculum and the results are phenomenal. Our son went from hating writing to asking for more. You can visit writeshop.com to take the placement test and to find out which level suits your child, tween or teen. With Write Shop teaching, writing has never been easier. And we hear that from parents all the time. And I just want to let you know also that Write Shop was actually created by a mother who homeschooled a struggling writer. So you will definitely not be alone in if you try out their curriculum, because it was created with a child like yours in mind. So thank you again, Write Shop.
I've never heard of Write Shop before, so that you taught me something new.
Yeah, they're an awesome company. They've been one of our partners since almost the very beginning of Spread Homeschool. And so we are coming back now. We're talking about dysgraphia. What is it anyways? And we're going to start off, I guess one of our viewers just wrote a question. Do you have any recommendations for homeschool planning organizing? It's one of my biggest concerns with me being able to homeschool in the future since I struggle with handwriting. There are a lot of organizers out there. I don't know, just in general, as far as teaching organizers or, you know, just organizers for yourself, what have you found that works, Sherry? Because I think for homeschooling, we can use just about anything. Does do visual organizers work better for you, or stuff on your computer, your phone?
I have used many different varieties. So when we're talking about organizers, are we talking about just keeping the day in order, you know, calendar-wise? Are we talking about graphic organizers, which are helping the student with keeping their information together that they can they later produce some kind of written document? There are so many different variations on that theme,
right.
That it's hard to answer that question. But I will tell you that the whole gamut of Google products, Google Keep, Google Calendar, and that you can put multiple calendars on one calendar, all of the Google Tasks and Google this and Google that have really helped a lot of students along the way. Grammarly is another resource that I absolutely love and help my students with. When I'm helping an older student, like middle school, high school, and we're really trying to create that essential paragraph or essay or what have you, I like to use a digital graphic designer organizer because a lot of them you can just keep adding.
Right. That's a good point.
The one that I have found that I have purchased for the year is MindMeister, but there are several of them that are out there that are just as good. I just found that I liked that one. But there's Google. So it's Google with a C instead of a G. Google, there is Ayoya. I don't know how to pronounce that one. It's A-Y-O-A, I think it is. There's definitely different ones that are out there. You can start on the left and then have bubbles on the right, and then those bubbles can have bubbles, and then those bubbles can have bubbles, or you might have a central thought and then you're going and have bubbles on all sides of it. So that with the digitals, that you can organize the paragraph that way, and that even might help Karasu, the dreamer, that might help you as you're thinking about college as well, as to looking at something like that. The paper-based graphic organizers sometimes are really difficult for young students that are having trouble with dysgraphia because of the way they're created. They're not created with the adaptations for handwriting in mind. So sometimes the space is too small. Sometimes there's not the right writing lines available for the student. So that I really am cautious when I use the paper-based graphic organizers, because some of the a lot of the kids that I see just don't get them, and are very frustrated by them because of the confined space.
Yeah, and I think then too, if you're thinking about how can I add to this, and the space isn't there, it almost makes it more limiting on the student than actually helpful. I just had my daughter, because she has a lot of executive functioning issues. I'm like, try out a bunch of apps, see what works, delete it if it doesn't work, put the next one on, try it. And because she's organizing a huge project this year, and she finally found one she liked in the colors that she could
colors are a big thing.
And so, just taking the time to figure it out.
So Karasu added, I was talking about myself as a homeschool parent. I think one of the things that you're going to find is color coding is going to be the thing that helps you the most. Potentially Google Calendar and having your different children in different colors, or have multiple colors, multiple shades of colors for each one of your students. If they have one kiddo that likes green, you have like three or four shades of green that are reflecting the subjects.
It's a great idea.
And then another kiddo might like red, so you have different shades of red, not getting into the pink, mind you, that are helping with the subject matter that might get too complicated if you do too much. But there's a suggestion is color coding it based on the child.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I know in like Google Sheets, you can, pick from all those great different colors within the color and all that.
And using an Excel spreadsheet or a Google spreadsheet can help organize as well. I know this isn't one that is as popular, but in Microsoft, they have the database program Access. If you're feeling like when you're putting things in a spreadsheet that you might get them jumbled up because you might move a column, sometimes that happens. If you put it in a database, it's not going to get jumbled up. Whenever you move line A, everything that's with line A is going to go with it. So that's the big advantage of a database. So keeping track of your students' work that way might be helpful.
Yeah, well, that's a good suggestion.
And OneNote or Evernote or those that you can save the kids' work might be something else that would work as well. Mm-hmm. Google Keep might be okay. But I think OneNote is a little bit more robust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of those out there. Thought of using them more than just...
I just went over the top. I probably have heard like totally blown away and stuff. So I will stop.
So I know we wanted to also talk about other disabilities similar to dysgraphia. And you did mention it at one point in our first half an hour about students getting their D's and B's mixed up because of short-term memory. And oftentimes we associate that with dyslexia. Are there overlapping things with dyslexia as well as other things that...
this is the way I distinguish it when I'm trying to help a parent out is reading is a sensory process. Writing is a motor process. So when you're bringing it in, it's a sensory process. So are you recognizing that it's a B? Are you recognizing that the ball and the stick are in the right place? Or are they not even recognizing that it's a B? And they're going, it might be a B, it might be a D. So looking at from that perspective, that sensory perspective, when you're going to do frequency or comprehension and you're speaking, that's actually also a motor process. That's oral motor. Okay. So reading frequency, fluency, and reading comprehension really are a motor process that's oral.
Okay.
Anytime you go to put it on paper, that's when it becomes the written expression. So the difficulty with putting it on paper makes it the dysgraphia. So does that help distinguish where we go from one till we bridge over to the other?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I like the visual you gave us at the very beginning with the different hands, all three, them merging at the top. But that makes it so much more understandable because we're like, well, isn't this one? Isn't this the other? And we want to separate them out, but how they all just kind of converge at some point and we can see, I guess, the different faces of them.
Yeah. Creative Minds Homeschooling is asking a question about the B and the D. And this is going to, because we're mirrored here in here, so it's going to be backwards. So forgive me for that. But what I do with the B, the D, the P, and the Q is I have them do exercises to a metronome. So I have a metronome on my phone. Okay. And I have an 8.5 by 11 sheet that is filled with just BDP and Q. And I have them set up so that they're pretty big. So like 200 point font. I'm not even sure exactly. So I only have four letters across the page, but I have the page filled. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's BDPQ. So we're just going to keep it in order just for the moment. Okay. Because the B is with your left hand and because they're mirrored, forgive me on the backwards piece, but I can't do it otherwise. So we have the B in the left hand. We have the D with the stick part in the right hand. The P is the left leg. The Q is the right leg. And we literally stand up and we march B, D, P, Q, and then the next line might be totally reversed. And make a Q, P, D, B, so that we are totally going to a beat. So the product, if anybody has ever heard of them, Interactive Metronome has done a lot of research on that rhythm and keeping the beat. Okay. You want to go about 60 beats per minute to keep it kind of slow.
Okay.
Okay. But you don't want it to go so slow that they're not getting into the rhythm.
Right.
But Interactive Metronome has discovered that there are some neurological diagnoses that will be advanced to the beat. There were some mm-hmm. that will automatically be behind the beat. There were some that will be right on the beat. So helping the kids get to make that metronome beat and work on the cadence a little bit will really help them get the idea. So they get that rhythm going in their head. Mm-hmm. And then when they go to actually do the writing part, it sticks a little bit better. So hopefully that will give you a thing. We also do the idea of BD, PQ.
Okay. Yeah.
You make your bed and then clean up the sheets.
That's great.
But I do like the using the metronome whenever I can. And I don't always just use it with that one. I might use it with other activities. Crossing midline activities where we have to make X's like that kind of and mark and go across midline. We might do that. So I try to use the metronome with different activities.
That's great. I know we're kind of diving into those things that parents can do at home. So what other adaptive strategies though might you have
for I'm moving things so I can get something for it to show you. Doesn't matter what book it is. Okay. I just happen to have this really intense book that Joseph Campbell created, The Hero with 1,000 Faces, that I have to read soon, but it hasn't gotten started yet. You ever open this book? It's a crazy book. Anyway, that's beside the point, but taking your fingers, you're going to be putting them towards your face so that the palm of your hand is away from you. I know I'm trying to do this because this will be on audio for some people. So to eliminate the idea of the visual, you're going to put both hands under the book so that your palms and your fingers are touching the book and then put the book over your head. Okay. From there, the kids are going to then walk on their tiptoes, walk on their heels, tiptoes, heels. Like four and four, kind of back and forth with that book over their head, with that position. What that is doing is it is forcing their entire body into full extension. What we're finding is that kids aren't in that elongated state enough. They're curled up. Because of technology, they haven't stretched. And that particular position forces them to stretch. You're forcing your wrist into that full extension. So you're strengthening one of the culprits of kids not wanting to write is hand pain. So you're stretching that muscle back there so that you can then be able to use your wrist a little bit longer. You could also flip it upside down. You have homeschoolers, so you're not going to have like a whole classroom of kids doing this, but you can always do handstands against the wall. Which will do the exact same thing as the book. You know, it's going to put your body in full elongation, and you can then like try to do
handstand push-ups.
My brain went to Arrow and watching Stephen Amell doing those in one of the scenes. Sorry, but that'll help. Another exercise that helps out kids is where you're marching and crossing midline. So left elbow to the right knee, right elbow to the left knee, and marching back and forth and crossing midline. And then, my brain just went blank. There was a third one I wanted to share with you tonight. My brain just went blank. So it'll come back to me.
It'll come back eventually. Now, you were talking very early on about the boy that you helped doing his work under a blanket. Is that something that parents should do if they have, and how does that help?
Okay. So this child also had sensory processing disorder.
Okay.
So he was using that as a kind of a cocoon to have a deep pressure piece. He was also using it as a kind of like the blinders on the side of a horse, kind of putting the blinders on, trying to avoid me. as part of it. So we were doing a little bit of sensory avoidance. We were also doing a lot of sensory seeking because of the proprioception and the deep pressure. So the combination of those things may be happening with the kiddo. It depends on the child, what's going on. Some days I would let it go. Some days, we're not doing this today. We need to come out and we need to be working like you would be in a classroom. And it depended on the rest of the situation that day. Honestly, sometimes it also depended on how I was feeling that day.
Right.
You know, we have to understand that our own bias and our own cycle, honestly, that whole PMS cycle has something to do with it.
That's great. Yeah.
Excuse me a moment.
Yeah. So are there any other things that parents might want to try if they do have a child who's struggling with writing that maybe could get them from where they are right now to adapting? You know, you were talking about this is, it's a process.
It's a process. Yeah. Break your crayons into little pieces. I know we got parents that are just went, I know it because I've seen it happen, but 1-inch crayons. I don't have one here. So the only thing I have for you to, this might work. 1-inch crayons are going to force the kids to have that pincer grasp along the crayon. So when they go to color, they're forced to use the two fingers, which will be in preparation for using the pencil. And then you put the third finger down just as a support. Another thing that can be done is this kind of a posture around the pencil. For those of you who will not be seeing this visually later, spread your index finger and your long finger apart, put the pencil in between them, and then grasp it with both fingers so that the pencil is actually between your long finger and your index finger. Instead of on the left side of your index finger.
Does it help you control it better, or is it easier just to pinch?
If you want to look it up, I believe it's called the Chinese grasp on the internet. That might give you a visual for those of you who will not have seen the visual right now.
Okay. Awesome. Wonderful. Well, I know we have about 8 minutes left, so I want to make sure if there's anything else you want to share that you share that, and then we're going to make sure that people know where to find you and your resources too.
Well, I do have a course set up for homeschool parents. It's called the Daughter Dysgraphia Toolkit. So if you go to my website and go to the parents page, and then down underneath in the other available resources, that is, you will get 14 weeks of information on dysgraphia. We'll talk a little bit about some. It does, I must say, admit, it does have a twist towards school, but the information that is in there will be invaluable to you. And we go through all the different kinds of dysgraphia and go into interventions for each one. Awesome. And I do talk a little bit about rhythm. I talk about exercises for the hands. I talk about memory strategies. I talk about the use of assistive technologies and how to use the phone to be a resource that's positive for the student throughout that course. So again, that's on my website and under the parents page, and then it's the Daughter Dysgraphia Toolkit. You can also go down to the black section at the bottom and find it down there too.
Okay. All right. And for if you're looking or you're, I'm sorry, if you're listening to this broadcast, Sherry's website is CHERIDOTTERER.com.
Yes, thank you. Yes, my mom gave me that uniqueness, and I can't find anybody else that spells it that way and has the last name Daughter. So, yes. Well, so you should be able to find me. It shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah.
There is some frequently asked questions on the parents page for everyone. There's a lot of resources on that parent page that you can look through. If you, there's also a way to schedule a consultation with me that you can have a free one-on-one conversation with me if you look on that particular page as well. So look at that. That's the page I will send you to.
Great. And then also your book.
And my
talk
book.
A little bit about that. It's a handwriting brain body disconnect is the name, and it's available on your website, right?
It is available on my website. I do United States shipments. But if you are international, then you'll need to go to wherever your local bookstore is. It also, if you have a primary language as Turkish, it is also translated into Turkish.
Wow. That's awesome.
So yeah, that one blew me away that happened, but it did.
Cool.
I have a copy of it in Turkish.
Well, I definitely couldn't read it, but
no, I can't either.
I'm glad there are many, because this has been great. Thank you so much, Sherry, for all you've had to share. I know it's benefited a lot of our parents. We've had many viewers on, a few of them commenting. Kara Sue says, thanks so much. Bye.
And you're welcome. And so long. It was nice to get to know you.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
And then you can find me on Facebook. I have a page. I have a group. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. And I do have a YouTube channel under Dysgraphia Consultant. And Instagram. I forgot Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm on there as well.
Awesome. So basically just about anywhere.
Anywhere but Pinterest. I'm really not on Pinterest.
Yeah, that's a difficult place to be with all the different sized images. So, but yeah, well, thank you, Sherry. Well, I'm glad we met in June. And
yes,
that was good to have
this
you
was
on
wonderful.
The show. Yeah, it was a
you're,
lot of fun.
You're welcome, Paulina, and Creative Lions. You're welcome.
So very helpful. So yes, I agree. And we are going to continue this theme into the next couple weeks still. Next week, my guest is from the UK. So we are going to do an afternoon show because, of course, if we did it at this time at night, she'd have to stay up all night long. So we're going to talk about the hidden advantages of dyslexia and dysgraphia. And she herself struggles with both of these. And she wants to share just how they have actually helped her. And so give you some encouragement for your students that struggle in these ways, that there are some advantages that you can look for. So excited about that. But just as we are wrapping up, I want you all to know that we have launched a new community on a new platform that we own ourselves. So if you have been connecting with us on Facebook or on Instagram and all these other places, I want to encourage you to go over to empoweredhomeschool.org, which is our sister website, and join our community there. It's brand new, and we also have some new live Q&A webinars with two of our team members, and they're going to be doing that every month, and you just bring all the questions that you have, and they're going to be helping you figure out personalized ways to help your student.
So, wonderful.
Yeah, lots of exciting things going. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you everybody for joining us. And Sherry, keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me tonight. It was great.
It was a pleasure having you. All right.
And, thank you.
Freedom Mind says it's amazing. So, yep. Well, thanks for all for joining us, and we'll see you again. Same time. But same day of the week. We'll be here on Tuesday again, but it'll be in the afternoon. So we'll see you all then. And thanks again, Sherry. And have a great night, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Hello, hello. Quenice Petway here, co-host of the Your Daily Bible Verse podcast. Are you someone who loves to take a deep dive into God's Word, one verse at a time, to explore His will for your life and desire to draw closer to Him? If that sounds like you, I'd love to invite you to head over to lifeaudio.com and search Your Daily Bible Verse to tune in and subscribe for daily inspiration, life application, and spiritual transformation through the in-depth exploration of God's Word.